Welcome and thanks for tuning in to Organic Matters. A little moment of explanation. I'm on the road right now, so I'm sort of having to make up a studio as I go. And I think it's going to work out all right, but I hope you appreciate it. We're going to do a little simpler show today. I'm going to hit a number of, I call my Organic Matters factoids, just because it's the latest information I can get a hold of while I'm traveling. By next week or so, I should be settled. I'm actually going up into the Virginia, D.C. area for a few months just to kind of explore around, and I do this a couple times a year. It's kind of what keeps me going. For this portion of the show, let's talk about some facts we've learned about the mass die-offs of a number of not just insects, but actually some of our other animals. And maybe we've kind of figured out what the culprit is. In the past dozen years, there's three new diseases that have decimated populations of amphibians especially, honeybees, and most recently we've had a real problem with bats, especially in the eastern part of the United States, and they're heading west. Increasingly, scientists suspect that low-level exposure to pesticides is contributing to this rash of epidemics. Let's start back where I first got interested and involved in this many, many years ago. Ever since Olga Owen Hutchins, and I happen to remember her name, shared the spectacle of a yard full of dead DDT-poisoned birds with her then-friend Rachel Carson was all the way back in 1958. Scientists have been tracking the dramatic toll on wildlife of a planet basically worse than ever, awash in pesticides. Even though you think we'd have learned better, today drips and puffs of pesticides surround us everywhere, contaminating about 90% of the nation's major rivers and streams, more than 80% of the fish sampled, and one-third of the nation's aquifers. According to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, fish and birds that unsuspectingly expose themselves to this chemical soup die by the millions every year. But as regulators grapple with the lethal dangers of pesticides, scientists are discovering that even seemingly benign, low-level exposures to pesticides can affect wild creatures in kind of unsuspected, subtle ways, and can even contribute to a rash of new epidemics, pushing species to the brink of extinction. Just in the past dozen years or so, no fewer than three never-before-seen diseases have decimated populations of amphibians, bees, and most recently, as I mentioned earlier, bats. A growing body of evidence indicates that pesticide exposure may be playing an important role in the decline of the first two species, and scientists are currently investigating whether such exposure may be involved in the deaths of over a million bats in the northeastern United States just over the past few years. For decades, toxicologists have accrued a range of evidence showing that low-level pesticide exposure impairs immune function in wildlife, and have correlated this immune damage to outbreaks of disease. For instance, we now know consumption of pesticide-contaminated herring has been found to impair the immune function of captive seals, for example, and may have contributed to an outbreak of distemper that killed over 18,000 harbor seals along the northern European coast back in 1988 when we first started studying it. And it works in unusual ways. Exposure to PCBs, for instance, have been correlated with higher levels of roundworm infections in Arctic seagulls, something we never would have thought of. The popular herbicide atrazine, which is really bad stuff in case you haven't done a material safety data sheet on it, it's bad. One of its complications is it makes tadpoles much more susceptible to parasitic worms that actually literally wipe populations out. And another discovery, the recent spate of widespread die-offs of amphibians, scientists discovered the culprit. It's an aquatic fungus called Batrachocytrium dendrobatritis. I'll only say that once. For simpler terms, it's actually a class of fungus called chytrids, first discovered in 1998. Its devastation, claims amphibian expert Zevin Zippel, is unlike anything we've seen since the extinction of the dinosaurs. So far, Over 1,800 species of amphibians currently face some form of extinction if we don't figure out a way to stop the fungus from attacking them. Hundreds of species, thousands of species of amphibians. It may be actually, the experts think, that chytrid fungus is a novel pathogen decimating species. They just don't have any armor against it. It's kind of like when we brought European smallpox and measles over here, we decimated thousands, tens of thousands of Native Americans in the 17th century because they had no natural immunity to that particular malady. But other scientists say there is a really good plausible story that chemicals affecting the immune system are making the amphibians way more susceptible to this particular malady that has been around, but they could always defend themselves. There's no doubt in many scientists' minds now that there's a strong correlation between upwind pesticide use and the declining amphibian populations, not just here in the United States, but all over the world. As an example, insecticides coated on the crops in the San Joaquin Valley of California are now found commonly in the Sierra Nevada mountains, where they settle in the air, the snow, the surface waters, and virtually inside the tissues of every amphibian that was studied. In an ongoing science from 1971 to 1991, they found strong correlation between upwind pesticide use. In particular, it's a chemical that was used a heck of a lot. The basic chemical is called carbaryl. It ends up in most of the amphibians in the whole area, and what it does is inhibit the amphibians' ability to build off a natural antifungal against the chytrid fungus. So it doesn't kill the frog, it just results in the frog being killed. Then about 6 years after scientists discovered the fungal assault on amphibians, a mysterious plague began decimating honeybees. Foraging honeybees first started vanishing from their hives, abandoning their broods and queens to certain death by starvation. This was way back in 2004, we already knew about this. Alarmed beekeepers dubbed the devastating malady Colony Collapse Disorder, or CCD. Between the years 2006 and 2009, collapse disorder and other ills destroyed over 40% of the United States honeybee population. Most experts now agree they believe colony collapse disorder is the result of what they call a perfect storm of honeybee debilitating factors, poor nutrition. Incidentally, we used to feed honeybees honey or at least sugar. Now they actually keep their honeybees on high fructose corn syrup. We can talk about that some other time. In addition, new poisons were introduced after that, known as neonicotinoids. And they're definitely part of the problem. Unfortunately, neonicotinoids came into wide use in the mid-early 2000s, but unlike older pesticides that actually evaporate or disperse shortly after application, neonics are systemic poisons. Applied to the soil or doused on seeds, neonicotinoid insecticides incorporate themselves right into the plant's tissues, turning the plant itself into a tiny poison factory, emitting toxin from its roots, leaves, stems, pollen, nectar, flowers, everything. As a result of the poison in Germany, France, Italy, Slovenia, a bunch of other places across the world, beekeepers made a strong enough lobby to prevent the use of neonicotinoids. Unfortunately, we originally canceled it 4 or 5 years ago, the use of it, but the Trump administration decided to cancel the law. So now they're using neonicotinoids again on a regular basis. They claim they use less. They claim it's not as dangerous because of the way they do it. But folks, it's killing our bees. We've got to quit killing the world we live in. So a lot more study on the bats, folks. This is not unknown science. It's just like so much science these days. It's just not followed and unappreciated. Let me bring up one more subject for this particular quarter of the show, and that's the problem with our bats. A couple of years after the honeybee started disappearing, so too did a number of our bats. The corpses of hibernating bats were first found blanketing caves allegedly up in the northeastern United States about 2006 or 2007. The disease that killed them was a cold-loving fungus called Geomyces destructans. What a name. And dubbed white nose bat syndrome for the telltale white fuzz it leaves on the bat's ears and noses, and has since destroyed over a million, well, as of this article, over a million bats now, way more than that. University of Florida wildlife ecologist John Hayes calls it the most precipitous, quote-unquote, wildlife decline in the past century in our entire North American continent. The problem with bats, folks, most people don't realize that a little bat that weighs 8 grams, some pennies as far as weight, can live up to 30 years, up to 3 decades. And in that time, even though they're eating very low level of these neonics and things that are in the insects that they catch, it accumulates in their bodies. Then they're not any longer able to defend themselves against the fungus. So in general, what's going on, folks, is in the end, there's just a dilemma facing pesticide-reliant societies, and we're the worst. We really are. Honest to goodness, some of the third world countries are more careful with their pesticides than we are, proving with statistical certainty now that low-level pesticide exposures make living things way more vulnerable to diseases than when they weren't bombarded by herbicides and pesticides their body was naturally able to ward off. The evidence, basically, folks, right now is kind of unequivocal. I mean, look at, here we go again, we need to look at science facts. The rapid decimation of amphibians, bees, and bats is from low levels of accumulating really dangerous herbicides and pesticides that we folks put into the atmosphere. That means one thing, it's something we can fix. We just have got to take a hold of it and quit letting politicians make decisions when they're not scientists. They have no clue what they're doing. All they're worried about is the next vote 2, 4, or 6 years down the road. And it's costing all of us dearly. Thanks for staying tuned to Organic Matters.